This is All Things Considered. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. After every mass shooting, just like after the one in Newtown, there are calls for putting restrictions on the type of guns and ammunition people can own. But some Boston researchers say it's time to start looking at gun violence as a public health threat that can be curbed, similar to smoking and motor vehicle deaths. We spoke earlier today about this with one of the researchers, David Hemenway, who is a professor of health policy at the Harvard School of Public Health.
I feel like we're in the same place we were in guns today as we were in motor vehicles in the 1950s, because then the motor vehicle manufacturers really tried to say it was all the driver. Cars don't kill people, people kill people was the implicit mantra. And it really wasn't until public health physicians asked a different question, not who caused the accident, but what caused the injury. And people were being speared by steering columns that didn't collapse. Their faces were being ripped apart by glass, which wasn't safety glass, and so forth. Now you can't make them without collapsible steering columns. You can't make them without seatbelts. There are certain things in guns that we want manufacturers to say you can't make guns which could cause great public harm with very little benefit, and that would be high magazine capacities.
You also point out that driver education is required to drive, and that the what might be applicable for guns would be mandatory gun safety classes.
A lot of states have mandatory gun safety classes, but many, many states don't. And almost all other developed countries require some sort of training that you know what you're doing before you're allowed to have this dangerous product.
You also draw some comparisons to smoking. And one that I thought was quite interesting was that smoking used to be perceived as glamorous. It made you look sexy and powerful. But we've changed that image so that you now appear possibly to be addicted and unattractive. You would like a similar campaign for guns. What do you want that campaign to be?
Well, basically, it's not for gun ownership, but it's for gun use in certain situations. There's this notion that if you use a gun in Hollywood, it's you're portrayed as this masculine person. And really, using guns, particularly inner-city kids, should be considered a sign of weakness, that you're really a wuss. You can't stand up for yourself without the use of this, quote, equalizer, because you are not the man similar to the man you are facing.
But that is still so ingrained in Hollywood. Bruce Willis, Clint Eastwood, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Do you think we have a long way to go there?
Absolutely, we have a long way to go. But we had a long, long way to go about cigarette smoking. All you have to do is look at any movie from the 50s or 60s or 70s. And everybody's smoking, and it's sexy to smoke. And now I think a lot of people would look, oh my goodness, you want to kiss this person who has this smoke? And that was a change in social norms.
So when it comes to changing social norms about guns, are you suggesting anything beyond just a public service announcement type campaign? For example, would you like restrictions on graphic violence being depicted in movies?
No, I mean, here's an example of changing social norms. In the motor vehicle area, one of the great norms that was changed was drinking and driving. When I was a young adult, social drinking and driving, everybody did it. It was against the law, but everybody did it. It was perfectly fine. And now it's not. Now it's considered not correct to do that. It's that you're endangering other people. One of the things that helped do that was the designated driver campaign, the notion that friends don't let friends drive drunk. And one of the things that I would love to see done is for gun owners to have a similar social norm when one of their friends clearly is going through a bad patch. The man has just been divorced. He started drinking. He started talking crazy. His friend should help him get rid of his gun for at least a few months till he gets over this problem. And I think, you know, one of the things that could have helped in Sandy Hook was that here you had a 20-year-old kid, and he clearly was doing badly. If the mother's friends had gotten together and talked to her and said, this is not a good time for your son to be around semi-automatics. Why don't we figure out a way to get the guns out of the house for a few, a year or two? That's the kind of thing that could really make a difference in preventing some of these real tragedies.
A third category you mentioned in which there have been public safety successes are unintentional poisonings.
Right.
You talk about now that there is childproof safety packaging for medications. There's toxicity reduction, you know, reducing the number of pills per bottle. How do you see that applicable to guns?
In two ways. One is we have childproof aspirin bottles. We should have childproof guns. We used to have childproof guns 100 years ago. This is not the major gun problem, but it's still a problem. Every once in a while, a little kid picks up a gun and shoots somebody, and it's crazy. This should not have to happen.
What do you say to fierce Second Amendment advocates who say The Constitution does not give you an explicit right to drive, to smoke. It doesn't say anything about unintentional poisonings, but it does mention guns, and therefore they're not sure there should be any limits on them.
Well, that's not what the Supreme Court says. What the Supreme Court has interpreted the Second Amendment to mean is that you have a right to have a gun, a handgun, in your home. But there always can be reasonable, sensible gun laws.
Even with many guns still being out there.
Even with many guns. And I think there's no question we're going to have many, many guns out there.
David Hemenway is with the Harvard School of Public Health. David, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.